Start your day with Morning Edition and wind it down with All Things Considered, only on KPBS. From global headlines to local stories, stay informed, inspired, and connected. Tune in daily or listen anytime at kpbs.org.
Welcome in, San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. On today's show, financial advice for tough times and the many ways people are supporting each other in uncertain times. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. It's safe to say we're living through uncertain times, politically, socially, and economically. Here in San Diego, one-third of households don't earn enough to cover basic needs like housing, food, and transportation. For a lot of people, money is a constant source of anxiety, and there can be emotions like shame and guilt wrapped all up in that. So how can you get the most out of your money, even when things are tight? What does budgeting and saving look like in an economy like this? And how should you plan for future periods of uncertainty? Well, joining me to help us tackle these questions is Mary Beth Storjohan. She's a financial planner and CEO of Allura Wealth. Welcome, Mary Beth.
Thanks for having me.
So glad you're here to bring some clarity to this.
Clarity and peace.
Yes, yes. Well, the government shutdown is in its second month, and many San Diegans are working without pay and struggling to make ends meet. Given that reality, how can people take charge of their finances?
You know, it's just such a tough space to be in, like you said, the anxiety and shame that comes with this. And when it comes to taking charge of your finances, I think the biggest thing to know is, one, you're not alone. And two, you do have to pay attention to them, right? So it's going to start with understanding your must needs, your must haves, and then those things that might be discretionary. So to take control of your finances, it's really digging in to create that bare bones budget of what is essential to keep the roof over my head, to keep the lights on, to keep the food, and then maybe living a little bit leaner on the rest.
All right. Well, what are some daily choices then that people can make to save money in tough times, from, you know, the cost of groceries to housing and transportation?
Yeah. So first, you want to start with anything that's negotiable, right? So if you're going to have, if there's a rent, membership, subscriptions, anything that's negotiable should be renegotiated during this time. So don't be afraid to advocate for yourself. It seems a little uncomfortable, especially if we're not used to, you know, raising our hand and saying, hey, we need help. But looking for those things that can be flexible. So keep fixed cost flexible if you can. And then you want to go ahead and cut some of those subscriptions if you have anything that's kind of, you know, if you have 15 different cable subscriptions or, you know, Netflix, Disney, Apple, all of those things, you want to go ahead and reduce there. You can actually also reach out to like SDG&E, your utility company. If you are going through hardship, most of these companies do have hardship programs, and so you can reach out to them ahead of time, hopefully before you're delinquent or delayed on bills, and let them know you're struggling. And they'll often work with you to get you on some sort of plan to catch up.
Well, if someone is looking to get started with saving or even investing, and they have only a little bit of money, what could you recommend they do with that?
So when you're just getting started, every little bit helps. And this is really about building that habit muscle. So if you have something like $25 a paycheck, $50 a paycheck, start building that habit of setting some money aside on an ongoing paycheck basis. Even if it's $5 or $10, I would love for you just to get set with the automation on payday. You also, in order to make your money go the furthest, you want to look into accounts like high yield savings accounts. Traditionally, a lot of people have that savings account with the place they have their checking account at the regular bank, but you're not going to get a higher yield on your money. So now you can get upwards of 3% if you're in a high yield savings account. And so you want to go ahead and put your money there to stretch it out a little bit further.
Well, you know, these uncertain times really underscore the need for an emergency fund. Many San Diegans are actually dipping into those funds right now, though. What's your advice for building an emergency fund from the ground up?
So if we're talking from the ground up, you know, we imagine our emergency fund like it's building a house, right? We're just starting with a foundation. While you'll often hear a lot of financial professionals talk about needing 3 to 6 months, I want you instead to just worry about that first $500. right? Getting that first micro goal, that amount set aside, and that will cover small emergencies that could really set you off track. And so if you're, again, going back to that $25, $50 a paycheck, if you can set that aside and separate it from your checking account, that's a great way to get started. Then it's there in case there is, you know, if there's a car breakdown, an emergency, something happens, breaks in the house, there's an unexpected medical bill. That's what the emergency fund is there for. It's unfortunately not there for upcoming holiday expenses or other areas. So you want to make sure that it is there to not, so that you are not thrown off track by unexpected expenses, and that you are saving for additional goals in other accounts.
Here's another question I have in mind. You know, I know the deregulation of financial institutions got a lot of support from Washington right now. How could that benefit people looking to make investments or get loans? I mean, is there something people should consider taking advantage of right away?
The biggest thing that you can take advantage of right now, even with uncertainty, the fundamentals haven't changed. And that's with deregulation, regulation. You know, what people need to be doing is focusing on a diversified mix for their portfolios. But what you can do is take advantage of any free money that's coming your way. So if your employer happens to have a match on your 401k, for example, you want to go ahead and try to contribute at least up to that match so you can get the free money that is being given to you. I would say from the deregulation standpoint, the best thing you can do is stick to something that's diversified, that's known, that, you know, and you're not trying to pick something or take a guess as to what the next hot thing is.
Hmm. Speaking of 401ks, what are they doing right now? Is retirement getting harder to achieve?
Retirement is getting more tenuous, I would say. It is getting, in terms of stretching your dollar, it's getting harder for people to feel like they are prepared. However, you should be, again, focusing on broad, low-cost, diversified funds like index funds or target date funds within your portfolio. And you should be rebalancing those accounts and becoming more conservative as you are getting closer to retirement. So if you do have your 401k and you're chasing those hot sectors, especially during election cycles of tariff chains, you just want to make sure that you are focused on a balanced, diversified strategy that's not going to put your funds even further at risk. Mm-hmm. However, market cycle, right? That's why it's called a market cycle. There will be ups and there will be downs. Staying invested, staying in the market during this time is going to be the best thing, rather than trying to time and get out and figure out when you would need to get back in.
Another financial milestone traditionally is buying a home. But is buying a home still a feasible option for people right now? And is it always a wise investment even?
Buying a home is not always a wise investment, depending on where you are financially and your understanding and ability to take on the financial costs that come with home ownership. Because you're not looking at just a mortgage, you are looking at additional expense in terms of upkeep, maintenance, increases in annual property taxes, et cetera. In terms of home purchases in San Diego, unfortunately, we continue to be in one of the most expensive, if not the most expensive real estate market in the country. So it is significantly harder to purchase a home here in San Diego. Nationwide, though, home prices are trending down a bit and rates are coming down slightly. It still remains difficult to buy a home. Whether or not it is still part of the true American dream, I think it can be debated. And I've talked about this quite frequently. It really depends on what financial security and freedom looks like for you and what you want your life to look like. Home ownership does not necessarily meet a lot of people's goals or dreams these days.
Well, you know, a lot of people also grow up in households where money is never talked about. You teach about something called money scripts. What can you tell me about that?
So money scripts are the invisible beliefs that we have around money that we inherited while we were growing up. These might be things that we are exposed to, like money is stressful. We might hear our mother, hate to stereotype, say that I'm not good with numbers. We may have seen our father be the one who controlled the finances or always did the paying of the bills. There are things like money worship or money scarcity. And these stories actually, that we have inherited from growing up. They're invisible and they tend to flare up during difficult moments in our financial lives. And they shape how we save and how we spend. So if we tended to grow up around spenders, maybe we have now become a very tight kind of person in terms of saving, where we don't allow ourselves to enjoy our money because we're so focused on saving and afraid of running out. Or we grew up around spenders and we inherited that same belief of, hey, why save for tomorrow when I should be enjoying my life for today? And so these money scripts are these invisible notions that can impact our financial lives. And by being aware of them and doing some research on them for yourself, self-discovery, you can actually learn to rewrite them or understand how they're impacting your life and make some changes.
You know, to close out here, I mean, for some of our listeners who are able to and looking to donate some of their money, what questions should they be asking when looking for organizations to support?
Oh, that's a great question. You want to be looking at where the organizations are using their funds. You can, there's a Charity Navigator is a great site where you can screen some of those organizations, but you want to know where your funds are being deployed to. And a lot of times you can go to that general fund that can help support the organization's needs, but you can also do things, I know, like we have the food scarcity that's happening right now and SNAP benefits. You can look to make sure that you're funds are going direct to causes that, you know, maybe going directly back to people who are in need of food right now. And so I think the biggest thing is look for those rating scores on something like Charity Navigator. Make sure that you are not necessarily, we do need to have operational budgets, but make sure that you feel that your funds are going to be used in a way in which you deserve. You also want to make look for those tax deductibility. There's so many GoFundMes. Those are not going to get you a tax deduction. So if you are itemizing on your taxes and you are keeping track of those receipts, make sure that your deductions are tax deductible and they should be an actual 501c3.
All right. I've been speaking with Mary Beth Storr-Johan. She's a financial planner and CEO of Allura Wealth. Mary Beth, thank you so much for your expertise in sharing it with
us. Thanks, Jade. Thank you.
Before we take a break, I want to direct you, our listeners, to our website. Our newsroom is actually looking for San Diego families to help shed light on the cost of raising children here. Help us out by taking the survey on our website, kpbs.org. Also up next, a panel of guests on how people in San Diego are building community to nurture, organize, and sustain themselves. KPBS Midday Edition is back after the break.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Bilhau Plumbing, Heating and Air Restoration and Flood Services. Family-owned and operated over 4 decades, Bilhau has been serving the plumbing, heating and air, and water damage needs of the San Diego area since 1980. With their fleet of trained professionals, Bilhau has the ability to service all major and minor plumbing and HVAC emergency needs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Bilhau is committed to providing excellent service to their customers with transparent quotes and attention to detail on every job. Whether you're in need of an HVAC installation, plumbing, or water damage restoration in San Diego, they offer the convenience of scheduling an appointment over the phone, online, or through live chat on their website. Call 1-800-BILHOW or visit bilhau.com, because we know how.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. We've been talking about the uncertainty of the economy and how the current political landscape is leaving everyday folks scrambling to make ends meet. But when institutions fail to provide, community groups often step up to the plate to organize, nurture, feed, and unify. Joining me now is a panel of local leaders working to empower our communities economically and politically. Brisa Johnson is Executive Director of the San Diego Black Worker Center. Brisa, welcome.
Hello, welcome.
Also, Diane Moss is Founder and CEO for Project New Village. Diane, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Andrea Guerrero is also here. She is Executive Director of Alliance San Diego. Andrea, welcome.
Thank you so much.
So glad to have you all here. First, how are we doing today?
We're good. We're present.
All right. It's a good day. Andrea, I'm going to start with you on this one. I mean, who is the most vulnerable to the direct impacts of political moves from President Trump's tariffs to the ongoing government shutdown right now?
There are a lot of people who are very vulnerable right now. Low-income individuals, immigrant families, LGBT community members. A lot of folks who are really at risk of this, the current political landscape. We are here at Alliance San Diego to support community members in a myriad of ways. And I think the most important thing we want to do is connect people to each other and to resources. Because when you ask yourself, how are we going to get through this moment? It's the answer is together.
Mm-hmm. Risa, with the current state of the economy, where does that position the working class in our communities? What are they having to think about?
Oh, man, the working class is having to think about a lot of things because not only are their current jobs at risk. I mean, we've seen more layoffs due to the attacks on DEI policies and specifically with Black women. So they're not only in threat of their everyday salaries and working jobs, but we're now in an economy where there are more unemployed people than there are jobs available. And now, in addition, we're seeing such an attack on the education system for our children. So for working families who have young children in Head Start programs, who rely on after school programs, who rely on breakfast programs and free lunch programs, they're now having to concern themselves with the systems that have helped them sustain the current economic landscape. And so their children's lives are on fire. Their work is in jeopardy. And there's so many of us that are suffering under this economy that the resources are also being depleted much faster. And therefore, help, unfortunately, is coming in much slower. And to Andrea's point, together is really how we're going to continue to do this, thinking innovatively about how we remove ourselves from relying on systems and how we build ecosystems within our community, whether it be shared resources, bargaining, you know, opportunities, communities coming together to defund their funds from larger entities and put those coins and economic and those dollars right back into local businesses, community support, mutual aid funds. So it's a lot on working families who ultimately want to work mm-hmm. and enjoy, you know, showing up at the job and being able to provide for their families.
Right. And speaking of sort of pulling all those resources together, Diane, your work is all about bringing food sovereignty to Southeast San Diego. So first, for those who don't know, what does food sovereignty actually look like, especially as the cost of groceries skyrocket?
So food sovereignty to me means being in control of how you access your food, not depending on others to bring you something, but actually literally being involved in the growing distribution, consumption of food. And we have several efforts that are trying to push that agenda.
Hmm. And is that, talk a bit about why that's particularly important in areas where it's harder for people to access healthy food.
Well, if things arrive, they're always slow. Nothing comes when you need it, so you spend most of your time waiting if you're not taking some action to bring change about. So to me, it's the only alternative, right, that we have to be responsible for what it is that we need that's essential for a quality life. We're telling me if you have a backyard, you should grow food in your backyard, not just for you, but to share with your neighbors. And I work with my neighbors every day, and they're sharing their abundance in this time of need.
Right.
Yeah.
You're teaching others the skills to do that, too, right?
Absolutely.
So how many people do you have come out to the garden to learn this?
I know that this year we had over 500 volunteers or people that come to our work days on a monthly basis. There's a network of about 20 people that are growing food in their backyards and making that food available to other neighbors.
Wow. Yeah. That's a lot. Now, let me ask you, has it always been that many, or are you just kind of seeing this great need and desire for, you know, to learn this stuff now?
So I think there's a lot of generosity around people who grow food or spend time in gardens, mm-hmm. and our numbers are growing every month. For the last, say, 4 months, we've had more and more people coming out to our monthly meetings to learn how they can share, how they can get involved.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're clearly all committed to this work. day in and day out, despite the onslaught of challenges I'm sure you're facing. From funding cuts, though, to political pressure, many nonprofits are having a hard time keeping the doors open. What keeps you coming back to this work every day, Diane?
So I work with my neighbors. I live in the neighborhood I serve. I have nothing better to do with my life than to make situation better where we live.
Yeah. Well, Brisa, I want to ask you the same question. And I'm also curious, what keeps you motivated?
Yeah, I think for many of us, we have like a moment in our life that kind of enlightens us and innovates us. And for me, it was actually Trayvon Martin in 2012. It was a huge moment where I realized that the only difference between me and Trayvon Martin's mother was the grace of God, not where I lived, not the amount of money I made, not the education I had. And once I had that aha moment, my fight for community became different because I saw myself in the community differently. And I wholeheartedly believe in collective solidarity and, more importantly, in collective responsibility. And I have a genuine heart of what's happening to others is happening to me, even if it's not directly or even if it's not now. I truly believe in the saying that like my freedom is tied to other people's freedom. And so because of that, I am committed to this work ongoing because it is a part of my core now. It is a part of who I am. It's a part of how I think and how I operate, especially growing up in a Christian home where we were really taught to love our neighbors and to show up for the foreigners and to show up for the underserved and underprivileged. So it's really important for me to have those values show up in my work and in my everyday space. And I think the motivation just comes from the idea that what's the alternative? You know, mm-hmm. The alternative would be to sit at home and wait for it to knock on my door, or the alternative would be to watch people suffer. And so my motivation isn't, it isn't inspirational speeches and it isn't books, although those help and they always add a little fuel to the fire. But the fire remains because it's my, you know, activism to planet the same way Alice Walker taught us.
That's right. And, you know, Brisa mentioned an aha moment. Have you had that same kind of moment, Andrea?
Well, I'm an immigrant, part of an immigrant family. And so my heart is motivated by the fight for a better life. The organization is inspired by the teachings of Dr. King. And in our everyday, we're trying to build a beloved community where everybody is treated with dignity and respect. So our work present day is to try to elevate, claim, and protect human rights that honor our inherent human dignity. We're living in a moment where our humanity isn't seen as shared by our political leaders, not all political leaders. And we have to remind ourselves in community that we do share that humanity and we have to take action. And so I love the work that Project New Village is doing and the San Diego Black Worker Center is doing, and so many of our other colleagues around San Diego. I think San Diego is blessed in this way, in that we are rich in community organizations that are committed to working together, working with each other to strengthen the connections between and among us. Mm. And I think that's what's going to help us get all the way through this moment.
Right. And I want to talk more about the initiatives you're working on right now. Alliance San Diego, you know, you all are really focusing on immigration and housing. What does that work look like?
Well, with the immigrant community, we have a broad reach throughout the county. We are engaging with about 500 immigrants a week, providing information and as well as assisting with any kind of legal remedies that might be available to people. Right now, the fear is so acute in the immigrant community. Most, you know, one in four of us are an immigrant, and many of us live in mixed-status families with a mix of citizens, residents, and undocumented individuals. And so the terror that is being inflicted in our communities is real. And we are trying desperately to get information out to folks. We have Know Your Rights door hangers and other information. We have a great group of volunteers that are helping us get that information out. With regard to housing, We are doing advocacy work at the local level to try to strengthen access to local housing, get rid of rental junk fees, and really trying to make housing more affordable here in San Diego.
You know, just a moment ago, I brought up the challenges nonprofits are facing right now. I'm wondering if the work changed for you at all, like either literally or emotionally.
For sure, emotionally. I mean, we worked our behinds off during Trump 1. And when Trump 2 came around, I personally had PTSD immediately. And I really had to take a step back and figure out how I was going to manage to get through these 4 years. But I think collectively, you know, I work with a dedicated group of people and a network, an ecosystem of organizations that are coming together in this moment. That said, like, we immediately had to, you know, print Know Your Rights materials, and we added staff. And at the same time, our bigger institutional funders were freezing their assets or freezing their giving because they were under scrutiny. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that puts us back, you know, into a financial situation that we haven't been in since the beginning of the organization of struggle. But we're trying to meet the moment with everything we have and hoping, you know, by the grace of God, that we will be able to continue to do that.
And, you know, Diane, you work closely with community members and volunteers every day. What are you hearing from people, and how are they feeling right now?
So this is not the first time we've had crises, and some of the people I hang out with, they, you know, you hunker down, you know, and remember the lessons from our history and try to do better, right? To try to pick good allies so that you can move forward with a solid force versus laying in wait for for the next issue to shoe to drop, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I think there's hope. I think that people want to get through this. I think that people are willing to do what it takes to be in a better space.
Talk a bit about the history lessons, because we hear so often people, you know, talk about the current state that we're in as if we've not been here before, or at least certain people haven't been here before. You know, tell me a bit about that.
Our history is replete, if you will, with examples of things not going our way. Justice is nothing that you get or someone hands to you. It's a struggle. And the decisions you make every day are the turnout, is how the struggle will turn out. So we need people to do more, I don't know, self-actualization, knowing what your values are, make actions that are in line with your actions, work with others that share your values, and really keep the faith. I think those are the things that are at hand right away that you can use.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to my mom the other day, and she was talking about, you know, while she was growing up, really the neighborhood kind of took care of each other. You know, if somebody was sick, somebody's walking across the street with a cake and dinner, and, you know, everybody kind of pulled together and took care of one another. And that was at a time when, you know, humanity was being denied, at a time when institutions did not work for Black people and other people of color. So talk a bit about economic independence, right, and being able to be self-sufficient, Brisa.
Yeah. So I think economic independence is actually crucial in this moment. It's actually something that we spent our Black Worker Summit discussing about the innovation of Black people developing their own ecosystems and no longer relying on the current systems in play. I think more than anything, when we're talking about building our own ecosystems, it comes with a deprogramming and a decolonization of the mind first. There is a lot of individualism that has been strategically programmed into our society, and folks have been moving in that isolation for years now, decades, and COVID only enhanced it even further. I think what we're seeing now is a breaking of a system that allows for minds to be liberated and for people to start thinking outside of what's been given to them and really develop the systems, the institutions, and the resources that they need collectively. And I think that's where that economic independence really plays a role. I think the biggest thing, though, when we talk about economics is really focusing on how we're spending our money. And I think for too long, we've been stuck in the state of comfortability and conveniency, and it has come at a cost of community. And so I think now, more than ever, it is time for people to divest and really reevaluate where and when and how they're spending their money, especially in a time where money is sacred. Always has been, but now when it's at the attack, you know, being attacked at the level that it is, not sure if the paycheck is coming, not sure if the benefits are coming, and when that direct deposit is going to hit, if that job is going to call back. It is now more important than ever to know where each dollar is going and have it be accounted for, and do our best to put that dollar right back in the community, shopping with local farmers, shopping at local stores, shopping with local businesses for the holidays. You know, there's tons of amazing local artists that have platforms and websites in which we could engage and buy our candles from and art from and whatever gift you feel like giving for the holidays, right? In addition to resources we need, there's businesses that are making their own deodorants and their own toothpaste. How do we stop shopping at these larger corporations who have made it very clear that they're not in alignment with the needs that community has, that they are not in alignment with protecting the community from the executive orders that are destroying our communities? And how do we start putting those funds directly back into our neighborhood and building and focusing on our own ecosystems?
Hmm. Andrea, to that point, I mean, how do mutual aid and resource sharing really support our neighbors when institutions don't deliver?
Well, we've been involved in mutual aid over the years in different crisis points, and we know how generous the San Diego community can be. And we've watched, especially through COVID, how mutual aid supports have been critical. So, you know, right now our work is trying to connect people to resources and support organizations like those who are here today, who are doing the work of connecting people to resources. You know, the formal systems are breaking down. And the informal systems were always there, but they took a back seat, and I think they are becoming more important now more than ever.
Mm-hmm. Diane, community building also means educating and organizing, which is something that you do a lot of. But what does empowerment through education actually look like?
I think it's, you know, learning and sharing lessons that we've learned. We run a weekly community resident leadership training, if you will, and it's really about how to take charge in your community. If those things are essential to having a quality life. You talked earlier about where we spend our money. We're looking at, we know we're in San Diego and it's a tourist town, but if you don't make an effort to put money where you live, in our neighborhoods, no, we're not having a tourist industry come in and support what it is we're doing. We have to spend the dollars. We have to make commitments to make investments in where we live and where we shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the lessons are sharing the results and sharing how to do that with our neighbors.
Right. And Brisa, you know, we're having this conversation on an election day, and a lot of people are dissuaded from politics and government in general right now. What would you like to see from elected officials?
I would love, and this does not apply to all, but I would really love for electeds to be more focused about meeting the demands of the campaign promises than worried about getting to the next seat. There are a lot of electeds who are focused on the future and they are missing the moment in the present. There are a lot of electeds who profit off the idea that certain parties represent certain groups of people. And the reality is the left wing and the right wing are on the exact same bird. And there has not been enough candidates that are community-centered and community-led. There are way too many egos that continue to push their own personal agendas and not the agenda of the voters. And it is not hard. It is really not that hard, and I guarantee you that actually being community-centered will save that next seat for you or that next title that you want to achieve. And so I'd really love for our elected officials to stop with the performative allyship, stop focusing on attending the galas and attending the ribbon cuttings, and actually talk to people, get back into the community, work with the organizations who work with the community, and let's bring back common sense policy. We have the number, we have the data, and at the end of the day, we don't need to keep coming out to city council meetings and getting our agenda on the docket when you have all the data and the information. We really need our elected officials to just do the right thing, because there's way too many fires for us to continue to push our energy into calling them, meeting with their offices, and getting them to do the right thing. If they just do it, then we will meet in the middle.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and a lot of the work you all do involves imagining a better world. And you all have so eloquently kind of stated what that would look like. But how do you see us doing that, Andrea?
Choosing courage. You know, Brisa was spot on. We all need to choose courage. We need to choose courage in our own lives. And elected leaders need to choose courage. Courage to stand up for each other, for human decency, for human dignity, not chase the dollar, not chase the position, not chase the glory. Like, what is it going to take for us to take care of each other? It's going to be to look at each other, to see each other, and what are our needs, and how can we fill them? Step in the gap. And, you know, we have an All People celebration coming up that honors the living legacy of Dr. King in January. And our theme is Choose Courage, because we feel that that is what is called for in this moment.
Diane?
I just thought of the word empathy. Have empathy for others, work with others, and be active. You can't sit back and not take a role. By not taking a role, you're saying something. So you need to be active in your activism, if you will. Yeah.
Brisa?
I mean, I share sentiments with Andrea and Ms. Diane on courage and empathy. I think there needs to be a consistent dying of yourself. I think that people need to be open to understanding that our way, the American way, is very limited in comparison to the rest of the world. And we really need to take time to meet people where they're at. And we need to take some of these healthy conversations and dialogue offline and bring them back into real spaces. We need to be back into the coffee shops, back into the rec centers, back into the churches, back into the community halls, back into the parks, back into the barbershops. And you need to meet people where they're at. I think more than ever, communities need to be organized in a way that they haven't been before. And there's a real desire for people to understand politics differently. And there's a real desire for people to want to help. And so now more than ever, it's really just showing up and dying of yourself so that you can learn and become someone new in the face of this movement.
Wow. This has been a really great conversation, you all, and one that we will continue to have, and one that I hope our listeners are having with their neighbors and their family and so on. I've been speaking with Andrea Guerrero, Executive Director of Alliance San Diego, also Brisa Johnson, Executive Director of the San Diego Black Worker Center, and Diane Moss. She is founder and CEO for Project New Village. Of course, if you're looking for any of those resources, you can find them on our website, kpbs.org. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Bilhau Plumbing, Heating, and Air Restoration and Flood Services. Family-owned and operated over 4 decades, Bilhau has been serving the plumbing, heating, and air, and water damage needs of the San Diego area since 1980. With their fleet of trained professionals, Bilhau has the ability to service all major and minor plumbing and HVAC emergency needs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Bill Howe is committed to providing excellent service to their customers with transparent quotes and attention to detail on every job. Whether you're in need of an HVAC installation, plumbing, or water damage restoration in San Diego, they offer the convenience of scheduling an appointment over the phone, online, or through live chat on their website. Call 1-800-BILL-HOWE or visit billhowe.com, because we know how.